All right, all of you swimmers and triathletes out there, I know you sacrifice a lot to be the best you can be. All those countless hours of training to reach your goals, which for triathletes and swimmers is a lot of hours in the pool. All that time with the chlorine can leave your skin and hair dry, brittle, and itchy. Well, we don't want that. And good news, there's a natural way to get rid of the dry, itchy irritation of time spent in the pool so you don't have to sacrifice your comfort on the way to reaching your dreams. Developed by a lifelong endurance athlete, Solpre's Total Body Swim Care Pack uses vitamin C to naturally eliminate chlorine. Starting with the shampoo and body wash to get rid of all the chlorine clinging to your skin, then doing a deep conditioning of your pool fried hair, and finishing with a smooth moisturizing lotion with one last pass of that all-important vitamin C. The Total Body Swim Care Pack has you covered from head to toe for you, your family, anybody spending extra time in that super chlorinated water. So if you want to get out of the pool not feeling like a sun-dried raisin, go to solpre.com/go and use the code 321GO to get 20% off your first Total Body Care Pack today. Solpre, SOLPRI.com/go, 321GO, and that's 20% off your first Total Body Swim Care Pack today.
This is a Jeff Galloway podcast.
Welcome to 321GO, the podcast. I'm John Pelkey.
And I'm Carissa Galloway, and we're bringing you stories from start to finish to keep the everyday athlete motivated to keep moving towards the next finish.
All right, Carissa, today we have Mark Burgett, the cheetah of Galloway Pacers. Now, you actually wrote that intro, but I did the research. You're really right about that. He's a veteran marathoner and came to marathoning later in life, the ripe old age of 39, and he quickly became a contender at races, winning his first race just a few months later. I believe that was a 5K. Since then, he's won the Daytona 100, the Donna 110, Miami 50-50, and a lot of other races, Carissa. He is, let's just say it, He's really fast.
And what I love about this story, obviously, as a Galloway, is that here's a guy that's really fast. He was really fast. I think 3:10 was his first marathon ever. But then he realized, hey, this run-walk thing makes me even faster. And he's still doing it to this day. He is our beacon. Him and Weston, the poster guys. Look how fast you can run with the Galloway method. And Mark's faster than Weston. Don't tell Weston I said that. Mark's also a great guy, so we're so glad that he could take some time joining us off the heels of his ultra win, which we'll talk about. And today we're going to share a really emotional listener email about Isaac. So I want you guys to listen to the end, meet Isaac, because I want you to meet him at the Wine and Dine 5K. Thank you guys for listening. If you have a story you want to share, you have a guest you want to hear from, email us, share some feedback to help us improve. And if you just love us and think we're amazing the way we are, you can be a supporter. Use the link in the notes and let's do this.
All right, Mark, thanks so much for joining us on 321GO, the podcast. We're going to start this as we start all of our podcasts with guests. How are you? And let everybody know, where are you?
I'm doing good. Thank you. Thanks for having me. So I live in Jacksonville, so pretty close to Walt Disney World. That's why I do a lot of the races down there.
I love when I do any East Coast race, whether it's a Disney race or an Ironman, because it gets so many like Run Disney family people like when I'm on the East Coast. But you are just right there. You're in Chris Twiggs territory. But I'm sure we will dive into that a little bit more. We do want to learn about your background because I think your story is really fascinating. And also you're just so fast with run, walk, run. I need to like comprehend this because I've seen Weston do it, but I know you guys run a little differently. But you had a recent accomplishment that was huge. So congratulations are in order. It's been what, like 3 weeks as we're taping this since your win at the TikTok Ultra 12-hour race. Is that what you call it? Can you tell us a little bit about it?
Yep. So it was the TikTok Ultra. So it was a 12-hour event. And pretty much the concept is to run for 12 straight hours and just accumulate as many miles as you can. And at the end of the race, at the end of the 12 hours, whoever runs the most miles wins the race. So during that, you could take as many breaks as you want. You know, you could run for an hour, sit for an hour. You know, obviously you're not going to accumulate any miles if you're sitting for an hour, but it's a pretty neat concept. I mean, any beginner that can go out there, you know, and just get through the 12 hours, however it takes.
I have to ask a follow-up on that because I'm just fascinated by these Le Mans-like races. you obviously not the first time you've done it. How do you come up with the game plan that works for you? Because, you know, I'm sure the people go out like the rabbit, the people go out like the tortoise, people who have different plans. How do you get there? When you started this sort of ultra running, were you in a different place? I'm just fascinated by how you could figure. I would not take the time to figure it out. I like the idea of the 1 hour sitting around part.
Yeah, right. But that's outside of that, John likes
the
12
other
hours.
11 hours sound really, really excruciating.
Yeah. So it was, I mean, it's a lot of experience. I've been doing ultras now for about 6 years. So, and it's a lot of learning. You know, when I started the ultras, I was just going out there and ran for the first 2 years. And eventually you're going to end up walking in a 12 hour event or 100 mile event. You're going to end up walking. And I found with the run walk that if you start from the very beginning of the race and do your walking, you're actually going to walk less than if you just ran till you got tired and then started walking when you got tired. But I do a lot of practice. I spent, I think it was 9 weeks of training, and I'll go out there and tinker with the run walk and try to figure out what ratio will work best for me over those 12 hours.
And so that's different than, say, your marathon ratio. What are they different?
Yes. Yeah, it's completely, every race is different, from marathon to half marathon, 50 mile race. It just all depends on what my goal is and how long the race is.
So what was your ratio for the TikTok Ultra?
My ratio was a 2 minute, 30 second run and a 30 second walk.
That is my usual ratio because I don't like to change things. I like just to keep my watch.
that's actually my favorite ratio out of all of them.
Okay, I feel good about that then. But this race, you've done it before, but you won. Like, how many miles did you do?
I ran 82 miles. 82.36 miles was the total at the end of the race. So I went into the race, you know, this race has been around for 10 years, and a runner, Caitlin Nagy, who ran for the Team USA 24-hour endurance team, she set the record the very first year at 79.5 miles, I believe it was, which was 28 laps. So that was the goal going into the race, was to either tie or break the record. So, you know, I practiced over those 9 weeks that I practiced at that pace. I knew I needed to run an 8:45 pace to break the record over the 12 hours, or a 9:01 to tie the record.
Wow. How many, you know, you said you can stop. Did you stop, or did you keep, and other than like food and fuel, did you keep going?
I continued the whole 12 hours, a couple rest stops for potty breaks. But other than that, just moved the whole 12 hours.
This is amazing. Now we are going to move on, but I have a question for you, because I think the hardest part about people who buy into the Galloway method, and we love it and we use it, is trying to convince other people to do it, because it's that the gun goes off, you run for 2:30 and you're putting your hand up and you're walking, and people can't, whether it's pride, whatever it is. When you did that in this race, were there people that were like, what is this guy doing? I mean, I know they probably already knew you, but like, what kind of reaction did you get?
No, I mean, I started out running pretty, I mean, I had to run at about an 8 minute pace during my regular run break, and then the walk break slows it down. So, you know, I started out first in the race, and then a quarter mile into the race when I did my walk break, you know, I had guys passing me already. And then it's only a 2.8 mile loop. So they start to spread out, and then once you're doing circles, you don't even realize who's on your lap and who's. But there's a lot of people who are out there doing the run walk also.
I think as the distance goes up, people kind of buy into it, maybe, you know, a little bit more. But it's that whole, you got to start in the beginning concept, or else you're undoing so much of the great work. Well, congratulations. That is a seriously massive,
remarkable,
literally like massive in miles accomplishment.
Thank you.
And you should be so proud. All right, let's go backwards, like way, way back in time. Tell us, where did you grow up, and were athletics a big part of your life when you were younger?
I actually grew up in Williamsport, Pennsylvania. So central Pennsylvania, a lot of people know of it because of the Little League World Series. They see it on TV on ESPN every fall. So that's pretty much where I grew up for 25 years. Moved to Atlanta for 10 years and then down to Jacksonville for the last 15 years or so.
And what about, were you a runner when you were younger? Because you're obviously a very talented runner.
No, not really. I was more into baseball and basketball and intramural sports, and never, I did 1 year track to fill a spot, you know, or my buddies needed a spot on the team field. So I ran my senior year, but other than that, no running at all.
Yeah. You talked about the fact that you were more like, you know, like a lot of kids that age into team sports, baseball, basketball, all of that. I will point out, Mark's wearing a Brewers hat. So think of that what you will.
We're still trying to figure that one out. We can figure out the 82 miles. We can't figure out the Pennsylvania, Florida.
Big Robin Yount fan. I don't know. We'll figure that out. And coming from Williamsport, I assume it, you know, you got a lot of baseball roots. So we're good with that. But you did, through your 20s and 30s, and you've told this in other interviews, you did continue to run, but more just as a stay in shape sort of thing while you did other athletic things. Now, that changed in 2013, just down the road a piece here. Explain how you ended up running in the 2013 Walt Disney World Marathon.
So, yeah, that was actually, I mean, a goal of mine always in the back of my head was, hey, I want to run a marathon before I turn 40 years old. So getting at 38, 39, I was like, man, I need to start moving on this. So, I mean, just looked up marathons, had no clue what I wanted to do. Oh, Disney's got a marathon. I didn't even know Disney had a marathon. So I was like, that sounds close enough. We'll go ahead and do that. So, yeah, I ran that with zero training whatsoever. I had no clue about running whatsoever. Didn't know how to pace. Didn't know about running shoes, really. I knew nothing at all about running. So I just signed up for that and went out there and ran it and said, I'm done with this. There's no way I'm going to run another marathon in my life. But you know how that goes with runners. 2 or 3 days will go by, and you're looking for the next race to sign up for.
All right. Hold on.
It goes that way when you run 3:10:16 and finish 123rd overall in the marathon.
Yeah.
You know, it's not like me where it's like I'm clinging to the balloon ladies for the last mile. Just please drag me along with you. Like, you know, humbleness aside, you went out and you had a really, really good race.
Yeah, but I knew nothing about running whatsoever. So 3:10 really didn't mean anything to me. I knew 3 hours.
Carissa is so angry right now.
I always heard that 3 hours was great for a marathoner. So I was like, man, if I didn't stop for all these characters, I might have been able to break 3 hours. So let me go ahead and do one more marathon and see if I can break 3 hours. So I did about a month of research on running marathons, how to pace yourself, and came out the next month. I ran the Donna Marathon about 30 days later and ended up breaking 3 hours, just under 3 hours for that race.
It's just remarkable. Do you ever think, and this is not the question I'm supposed to ask, sorry, John, like, man, had I run in college, like I could have been actually like really, really, I mean, that's from, my husband is Jeff Galloway's son, and it took him 4 tries and a lot of effort to break 3 hours, and you're doing your second marathon. I mean, what were you like, man, I'm really good at this.
Yeah, I've had a lot of people make comments to me, do you know what you could have done, you know, and I don't even want to think about that, you know, because maybe if I did that back then, I wouldn't enjoy running today as much as I do today. So I'm happy with the way everything turned out.
No, I mean, and you're doing a lot for the sport and for the community. You may not even realize it, but you are showing a lot of people that you can do this, you know, wonderful way to reduce injuries by run, walk, run and do it quickly. You're always, you're our poster child. I have another question before I go on to this wonderful question that I'm supposed to be asking, John.
I just gave you some suggestions.
No, I like the suggestion.
Go back to the TikTok Ultra and just want 20 minutes on why it seem like a good idea?
Why? I want to know one. I'm going to ask them separately. So my first one is, you got into the Disney Marathon. We always joke that that's impossible now, but you got in. Was your timing just good?
Yeah, it must have been. No, actually, I'll tell you why. Because it was sold out when I went to register for it, and I ended up doing a charity. So I ended up getting in through a charity bib, and that was my first marathon that I did that way.
All right. Second question was, did you enjoy like the Disney aspect of it?
I did. You know, I really did like that because that was, I believe it was the 20th anniversary, the first year that they did the spinner medal and all the character. I mean, I love that. If you give me a choice between Boston Marathon or the Walt Disney Marathon, I'll take the Walt Disney Marathon every day. That's how much I enjoy the Disney Marathon.
I'm like, I guess I've never run the Disney Marathon, so I actually can't have an opinion on that. But I've run the Boston Marathon, and I believe you must have too, right?
Yes, I've done it twice.
I think the Boston Marathon is the greatest marathon on earth. So, I mean, Mark Ferreira, can I please run the Disney Marathon? I think it's just really remarkable that you got in there, you hit the ground running, literally, you know, winning races. I just think it's so cool. And then you said you were researching training. So what came up when you were doing that initial research?
Man, it's been so long ago. The main thing I was looking for was pacing, you know, because I went out and just ran as fast as I could in that first marathon. I was like, you know, if I got to break three hours, I'm going to have to slow this down and figure out, just go the same pace the whole way. So I ended up printed off a pace chart that gave me each mile, what I had to hit on each mile. And I just followed that pace chart. You know, when I was too fast, I slowed down, you know, and just followed that pace chart the whole way.
You have a discipline that most runners don't have. I can hear that like in the way you're talking about your research. So I think that contributes to a lot of your success too, because most runners are not disciplined enough to slow down, or you want to build that buffer when you start going. So that's really interesting to hear.
It feels really good to slow down. I enjoy running and slowing down. It feels really good. It's better
there you
than
go, John.
You know, running yourself into the ground.
Yeah, that's the one talent I have, is slowing down when I'm running. I'm as good at that as anybody anywhere. Okay, well, this leads into what our next question was anyway, because we've talked about it. It is counterintuitive, the Galloway method, in most athletes' minds, to convince somebody, well, I tell you, if you integrate these rock breaks, you're going to go more quickly. When did you first become aware of that, and when did you start integrating that into either training or races? How did that come about for you?
So I did start into the Galloway method till about 4 years later. So I had about 4 years worth of running. And then just knowing Chris around town, I've got to be friends with him. And I don't even know how it came up. The one day he's like, hey, you interested in pacing one time? I was like, yeah, I'd love to try it. So went out there and tried the run walk pacing with him, and just fell in love with the run walk method from day one. Just really opened up a whole new world to my running. And kind of like a second joy out of running, using the run walk method.
Do you remember, you know, your ratio when you started? Because I know when I started, I was four minutes and 1 minute. We were doing like the longer 1 minutes. Were you ever around for that?
I think it was a 4 minute and 4 minute run, 30 second walk. And I think that's very similar to what we use now. Because I'll mainly pace an hour and 45 minutes for the half and 3:20 for the full. And that's pretty much what we use for those two times.
So once you kind of went into the Galloway method, did you never went back to straight running?
I did for a while. You know, probably the next 3 years or so, I flip flop back and forth, whatever, you know, it was. And then over the last 3 years, just pretty much seriously just got into the run walk, where that's my dedicated runs or run walk all the time now.
So you met Chris. Talk us through the first time you met Jeff Galloway. What was that like?
That was during the 2013 marathon. You know, I was a little bit starstruck, you know, because I knew he was I believe it was 1972 Olympian. So, I was very starstruck with that, and really didn't even know the run walk, the whole thing about that yet going at that time. So, and talked to him at the booth, and, cause it was a really warm day that day, and told him, you know, this is my first marathon, and he just warned me, hey, it's going to be a warm day coming up. You know, make sure you slow down your pace, which obviously first marathon I didn't listen to whatsoever and was dying about mile 18 or so. But that was my first time I got to meet Jeff.
Okay, so we talked about heat. This brings me to our next question. Disney World 2013, we're moving forward to October 2014, a race that is no longer with us, but was extremely hot and extremely humid that you did extremely well at. Do you know what race I am talking about?
You're probably talking about the Tower of Terror.
I am. Tell us, you know, I think some of our listeners love these flashbacks because they were not there for any of these races. It was our night race. It was our 10-mile race. So talk us through your celebration and your achievement at that Tower of Terror 10 miler.
So yeah, the Tower of Terror race, that's by far my favorite race, because that's when they used to run the Disney races at night in the evening. So, and it's just a total different experience running the whole race in the dark. It's really neat. That was the Tower Terror, obviously, they had a villains theme to it. So, which added to that mystique of the night race. And Ashley, I won that race. So I ran with another runner. We battled for 10 miles, I believe it was, and was able to pull away from him in the last 3 miles of the race and got the victory. That was actually a dream come true. Winning a Disney race, you know, I can die happy knowing that I won a Disney race.
Yeah, and that was when we had award ceremony. So you sent me a couple, you know, maybe a week or so ago, the picture of us. And I know, knowing myself, I don't know if you were 40 then, but I probably would have mentioned like, oh, he's a winner and he's a master's athlete. Like I would have like, and I thought that was cool until I'm like right now, like 7 days away from being a master's athlete. When I was like 20 something, I thought that was cool to mention it. Now I think it's John, a
it's
horrible
not so
thing.
Bad. It's not so bad. It's just a number.
No, but I do. I remember that. I remember being, you know, being from Jacksonville, and then it's you get kind of see these names over and over again. That was such a fun race, but it was so hot and humid every single year.
I love the heat. I love running in the heat.
Okay. Well, you're a Floridian.
It's actually getting too chilly now for me. It's 60 degrees up here in Jacksonville in the morning, and I was like, it's getting chilly to the point where I don't like to go out in the morning now.
Wow, that really does put you in the minority, though, because most runners will say they would prefer to it to be a little cold. Why do you think that is? Coming from Williamsport, where my mom lives in North Central Pennsylvania, you get all the seasons up there. So how running in the heat, how did that become your thing?
I don't know. I mean, I think I have a rather small frame. I weigh 115 pounds. So obviously somebody that weighs 160, 180 is going to struggle a little bit more in the heat. So, you know, I do struggle in the heat, but I probably don't struggle as much as somebody else because of my small stature. So that's kind of maybe a little bit of an advantage I have. But living in Pennsylvania, trying to get out of the cold for 25 years, I'm not going back.
Well, I have to be honest. I know that colder weather, and there's a gap to it. I don't love running in cold weather because I don't love standing in corrals in cold weather. Like, I think that's, for me, the part that I really don't like. But I'm not yet angry about our cold snap is gone. We had like 2 days. It's gone here in Orlando, but I'll be ready for some 60s again.
I mean, I'm already breaking out the I'm breaking out the winter clothes already. So for the mornings.
My goodness, my goodness. I'm just living for some sort of seasonal change, Florida. Yeah. Can we have that back? We had them in 85 when I first moved here. Okay, now we've mentioned, we don't have the kind of time to mention all the races that you finished first and second and all of that. But I know in 2015, the Donna National Marathon, that was a really important run to you for personal reasons. Can you talk a little about that?
2015 Donna Marathon. Yeah. That was the year my wife was diagnosed with breast cancer. She was diagnosed in, I believe it was 2014 around Thanksgiving with breast cancer. 2 months of she started her treatment. And then 2015, the Donna Marathon was, she was beginning her chemotherapy treatment the very next day after that, and went out and ran a how can I say, it wasn't planning to win the race. I had done the Disney Marathon the month before. That was my goal race and had a bad race. I ran 2:48, so it wasn't that bad of a race, but not what I wanted to do. And so I ran that marathon. 30 days later, I was like, oh, I'm going to run the Donna Marathon to support, you know, my wife, Christina. And everything just fell together in a story, and was able to win the race.
I have a couple questions for that. What was your time there and how close of a battle sort of race was it? Because from us mortals, we don't really think about battling in a race with other athletes.
I think I ran 2:45. So 2:45, it was a really windy day. It wasn't my best time, but that was overshadowed by the story. I mean, with her being treated at the hospital, because that's when the race started at, or it finished at the Mayo Clinic here in Jacksonville. The finish line was right outside of the hospital. So, I mean, I finished the marathon on Sunday, and the next day we were at the same hospital where she began her chemotherapy treatments.
So I can imagine that was a very emotional run for you. Did you allow yourself to think about that while you were racing, or was it not sort of until later?
No, it was in my head the whole time. There's a lot. We had so much support. I mean, everybody knew what was going on through the race. So and had just, I mean, amazing cheers and people supporting us the whole time. It was a story that can't be written again, probably.
Yeah. How's your wife doing now?
She's fully recovered, and she's going. I mean, it was a journey. I mean, it was probably a 4 to 5 year journey, but she's back to 100% health. She's a survivor and living everyday life like anybody else can.
Well, good. I'm glad to hear that. And that's truly a fantastic race. That was whatever the first year of the race was. That was my first marathon when we came back over the bridges and finished at Mayo. So I don't know what year that was, and I don't even have my medal. I threw out my medal at some point. I hate clutter, and at some point I threw away my first marathon medal, so that was pretty dumb of me. But my aunt passed from stomach cancer, and I know it's not the same thing, but those are just the people you think about when you're running a race like that, that you're running for so many people who battled, who didn't survive, you know, who did survive. It makes it really emotional, so that is a beautiful race, and just, I guess, like you said, picture perfect that you won. We talked about a lot of your accolades, but we've heard you say before that some of your greatest training challenges is race nutrition. How has that evolved for you, and what have you learned?
That race nutrition is something I seriously struggle with still to this day. I did a race back in December, the Daytona 100, and was lucky enough to win that race with run walk. But at mile 50, I was done. You know, I mean, through the first 50 miles, Coca-Cola, my gels, some solid foods, and then just running for 50 miles about, you know, the 8 hour mark, your stomach turns and you just don't want any of that stuff anymore. So I just decided I was done fueling for the most part. I stopped taking anything in, a little bit of ginger ale and some tortilla chips, and just said, I'm done, you know, and just going to power through the end. And it's not very fun. And still, I cannot figure out the nutrition part. That's my weakness.
Well, that's something you and Twiggs. I mean, Twiggs does a good job. And even me as a dietitian, it's so hard. It's a little easier to coach someone through, let's say, a race nutrition for 3 hours, right? But when you get into 5, 6, 7, everybody's body is so different. And everybody's body is so different on the day, it seems sometimes. You know, weather conditions and what you've eaten and what always works for you, you can't tolerate. So I think those ultras are a real challenge, and the nutrition is part of it, because without those calories and without those electrolytes, you just can't go anymore.
Yeah. Yeah. So, I mean, I did find this last race I did during the TikTok, I just experimented with mashed potatoes, which that definitely worked well for me. So, we're going to see how that goes, start with more mashed potatoes throughout the race and see if that'll help.
Will we see mashed potatoes at the Disney Marathon?
No, no time in the marathon. I can get through. I can get through 3.5 hours without very much fuel at all. So.
Are you stopping? They're at like the aid stations where you're getting the mashed potatoes.
No, I'm not stopping. That's actually part of my walk break. So with this TikTok, you know, 2.85 mile loop around, I had my crew out there. Uh-huh. My close friend Dawn came out to help me crew. And she would be there at the start line with everything I needed every lap around. So I just timed my walk breaks to, as soon as I crossed the start finish line, I'd start walking. I'd have a 45-second walk break. I'd use that and walk a little bit longer and just grab my mashed potatoes, Coca-Cola, all that stuff, and just intake that before I took off on the next loop. But I was moving the whole time.
The reason why I'm so excited about this is because it was probably maybe 10 years ago now, where I worked for like the U.S. Potato Commodity Board. And they were like, we need you to write a recipe for mashed potatoes that people are going to eat while they're running. And I was like, they were paying me. So I was like, okay. But I was like, no one is going to do this. But like, finally, you know, someone, you probably didn't follow my specific recipe. It was with instant mashed potatoes, and you put in like a baby food pouch. And there was a little bit of, I put a little salt and then a little lemon zest on it to give it a little more flavor, Johnny. So
I got to find out a way to make that portable. So I mean, I was just using the instant mashed potatoes in the cup with a spoon, and when I came through the start line, walked for 45 seconds, ate as much as I could, and then off I went till I got back around. So I do got to make that a portable way, because that won't work on a point-to-point race,
exactly,
like 100 straight miles from the start of Jack's Beach down to Daytona. So I need to find a way to be able to take that stuff on the go.
Well, I will look for the recipe, because I think we had, it was this little plastic bag that was either a baby food container or like something like that, that you was like a fillable baby food thing that you could carry with you and put in your pouch, because that was the whole impetus of me writing this. And as I'm writing, I'm going, people are going to think I'm bonkers, but
No,
I would just think one of those confectionery sleeves that when you're decorating a cake that you can squeeze it out of, and you just get one of those, pop the top off, and just I've had a lot of experience with mashed potatoes. So really, honestly, if anybody wants to get in touch with me, I could probably talk you through this and help you through. Chris probably should have reached out to me back then.
It's my favorite food. Mashed potatoes are my favorite.
Oh my God!
Food.
I'm just picturing somebody standing there. If I'm trying to run another 10K, handing me the KFC mashed potatoes with gravy. Come on.
Well, the gravy there gets a little tricky on the digestion there.
I do like the coleslaw as well, the vinegary stuff.
Now all I want is like one of those Thanksgiving sandwiches. I might have to remake my dinner menu for tonight now.
You're welcome.
Weston, go to the store.
All right, let's switch gears a little
bit. Why would we switch gears from mashed potatoes, John, ever?
unless you want to just roll right into Healthier You.
No, there's not even a Healthier You today, John. This is it, folks.
Oh my gosh. So mashed potatoes, people. This is my favorite Healthier You that I have to say of everything we've ever
done. We'll do next week. We'll dive into mashed potatoes. It's very topical. Thanksgiving is coming.
I love it. You're also a pacer, Mark. You pace for races. How did that start for you?
That was around 2017 when I saw Chris a bunch at some races, and you know, he pretty much knew some of my running accolades, and you know, the one thing he looks for as a pacer is somebody that can do that pace comfortably. So up there at the front, I could handle that. I'm a 235 marathoner. I ran a 235 marathon, so with pace and 330 was going to be fairly easy for me. So that's probably kind of had the foot in the door that way.
What is it like to pace your first race? You know, what was that like for you? Was it a Disney race that was your first one?
Yeah, it was the Disney Marathon. I was lucky because it was Chris, and he had, you know, he's got all the experience doing that. But it's a lot of pressure. It's a lot of pressure on the pacers to go out there because, you know, all the runners out there are depending on you. You're going to run 3:30, so you better finish 3:30.
Mm-hmm. And they're checking. They're looking. I don't know if Jeff's looking, to be honest, like, I don't think Jeff's paying, but Chris is paying very close attention.
The runners do out there with us. We've had a lot of comments, you know, they questioned us at the beginning, you know, are these the right paces to run? And then when they get the mile, when we cross mile 13 and we're 2 seconds off and they're like, okay, we're done. They've said we're done questioning. We trust you.
Yeah, it really is pretty remarkable how on point you guys are. Well, can you take us through, and we talked to Chris a little bit about it, but from a pacer perspective, take us through a race morning. Are you getting together in the beginning? Is there some sort of discussion? Because, you know, again, Central Florida, people who may not know, our weather could go anywhere on any race weekend. So what are those discussions like before the race? How early do you have to get there?
So on a run day, Disney race, we're just like everybody else. We're up at 2 o'clock in the morning and just filing into the parking lot like everybody else. We do have a pacer meeting. We have a group. We always have a designated spot. We'll all get together for our pacer picture. And then, you know, Chris just gives us, you know, a word of advice. You know, this is what the weather is looking like, or these are the issues that we're having in some of the other races with some bottlenecks, just to give us a heads up on what some of the conditions will be on the course. But pretty much all the pacers have so much experience. We know exactly what we need to do to get that pace down and get them to the finish line.
All right. I have two more questions about pacing. One, especially you, and I used to see you finish all the time, and now John and I actually are never there when you finish. But because a pacer's goal is to finish on time, but not necessarily everybody finish with them, you are alone a lot when you finish, true or false?
Yes, we are, because, well, we're the first pace group up there. So a lot of those runners that we have are very competitive. So when they get close enough to the finish line and know that they're going to be able to finish, they're gone, because they're trying to shave every second off of their time that they can. So some of the people farther back are not worried about that as much, you know, shaving a couple seconds off back there. And their traffic back there is just a total different story. You know, we have an open road up there with us, and back in the back of the pack, I've seen some of the pictures and videos of back there. And it's very tough to run. It's very tough. Those guys have a hard, their job back there, the pacers in the back of the pack are probably 10 times harder than what ours are up front.
Yeah. Well, I always say on the mic, I say like, he's fine. He's alone. Like, don't worry. Like, he's done his job. Like, they're not upset to be alone. But you talked about the difference of, you know, you pacing and anybody running in Corral A that is running a quicker pace. It is just it's not crowded. You haven't had, there's so many reasons why it's not crowded. In terms of etiquette, can you kind of talk us through some etiquette advice you'd give to anybody listening for when you're running with a pacer and kind of keeping that patience when it does get congested and having that faith in your pacer?
Yeah. So that's, I mean, we deal with that a lot, you know, those bottlenecks that you get. So, but we always have a talk with our runners at the beginning before we start and just like, hey, this is what we're going to do. This is our pace. We're going to run for 4 minutes, walk for 30 seconds, explain how we're going to do it. You know, we need to make sure that everybody's going to be off. We try to keep all our runners off to the right side as far as possible, that we're going to raise our hands when we walk. So, and give everybody heads up because we don't want to be stopping in front of people that are just straight running. We try to keep them out of the way as much as possible. And that's when we're also on the course and we know we're coming up on a walk break. We're not going to pass a runner and then start walking in front of them. So we're always aware of that out there on the course. Okay, we're getting ready to take our walk break here in 30 seconds. Let's just slow down just a little bit. It's going to cost us some time, but we're going to stay behind this runner because we know we're walking. So we don't stop in front of them.
I have a question because I've never ran with a pacer up front at a Disney race because I'm working. Do you start with a group and like that kind of dwindles off like with the quicker runners? Because I feel like what's it like? Are they starting with you? I've never done this, so I'm going to try. Or do they go out too hard and then find their way to you?
We usually start with a group of I'd say 20 runners,
okay.
Which is fairly well. Then we'll pick up some people. We've had some people near the end of the race that said, I'm going to stay with you guys to the end and then start doing our, they ran the whole race and start doing our run walk, which obviously everybody knows that's probably not the best way to do it. Cause they're not benefiting from that run walk, but they're pretty much just staying with us just to make sure they get their time. I lost my train of thought.
That's okay. I keep interrupting John, I'm going to get you a question, but I have one more question. Have you paced someone Disney or elsewhere to a BQ? And what did that feel like? BQ is a Boston qualifying time.
Yeah, we've paced, I'd say we've paced several runners to, for BQs, but actually I think my proudest moment out of pacing was a couple years in Donna. I paced a runner, in the Donna marathon. His PR was a 4:25. And I was currently pacing the 4 hour pace group. And Chris had spoken to this guy at the expo the day before and was trying to talk him into running with us. And the guy's like, I can't, you know, I've never done run walk before. I've only done a 4:25. And Chris just told him, hey, just try it. There's nothing to lose. So he came out the next day ready to run, you know, with us, knowing that, you know, he was going to try to break 4 hours, but he was 25 minutes off it. And he ran the whole time with us, run walk. And broke 4 hours.
Wow.
So a 25-minute PR in that race from doing run walk.
Mark, that is my dream time. And I do not have faith in myself that it will ever happen. But that is my dream time. I'm running Space Coast. My PR is 4:18. But I think I'm going to start with a 4:15 group. I don't think I have that much faith in myself. But that's amazing.
And the neat thing was this guy felt good at the end of the race.
That's,
I mean, you
remarkable.
Think that he'd be dying, running 25 minutes faster, and he looked really good at the end of the race.
But that's the day like marathoners dream of, right? There's going to be that.
Yeah.
There's 2-3 of those days where you ate right, you rested right, your body was good, the weather was good, and you have that beautiful opportunity. So that's so cool.
The tough thing, though, on those big PRs like that, if you PR by 25 minutes, it's tough to come back and PR again after that.
That might be a retirement, though. Just
well, then you get into the 10-year age bracket PRs, right?
Oh, gosh, that's very funny. All right, so we're talking about the pacing stuff. Now let's jump back to you being a very, very fast runner. Somebody now is getting into running and they really are on that mindset is I want to get faster and faster through the season, want to get faster. I know there's no one magic way to do that, but what's the best advice you could give somebody who's really, really looking for steady improvement?
You obviously you're going to need to build the base first. And a lot of interval training, mile repeats, 800 meters, faster, you know, what faster than what your goal pace is. Then you can start tinkering with your run walk to see what kind of ratios are going to work for you best. With that, the run walk, there's so many options of, you know, 3 minutes run, 4 minutes run, 5 minutes run, you know, 45 seconds. You just tinker around with what works best with you to see how it's going to work.
What is your long run race pace?
what is my long run?
Yeah, what's your pace for long runs as compared to your race pace? Because I am for the first time trying the slow long run pace. So what is your long run pace if you were training for like a marathon on your own?
So this year, you know, currently as I'm training for my races is a 7:30 pace, and that's with the run walk. So a lot of my ultras are like an 8:30 pace. I'll do a 50 mile here, the Daytona 50 miles, and my race pace is going to be 7:30 per mile. So that's the way I approach every training run, is going and running 7:30, and it's kind of like muscle memory, just getting used to that pace.
So do you and Chris Twiggs ever argue about that? Because Chris Twiggs is very 2 minutes slower than your intended race pace are your long runs.
Yeah, I mean, everybody's got their own. We don't talk about that kind of stuff training.
I'm going to get you both back on the podcast. We're gonna hash this out. No, I totally understand what you're saying. And that has always been kind of what I've done. I've wanted to be around race pace. And then I just would beat myself up when I was slow. But now I'm trying this 2 minutes slower. And you know what? It takes freaking forever, Mark.
See, that's what I don't have the time out there to spend, you know, eight hours out there on a training run.
So. Yeah, no.
For my TikTok race, the TikTok race, I was going for an 8:45 pace was my race pace.
Yeah.
So I trained for 9 straight weeks for the most part at 7:30. You know, I do 2 runs, 15 miles in the morning and then 5 miles in the evening. So my 15 miles in the morning would be 7:30 pace and then come back out in the evening. And that would be easier. That would be closer to an 8 minute pace.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that's, I mean, I know a lot of people that do that, you know, and I am enjoying the easier pace on the long runs because I don't feel any pressure. It doesn't feel hard. It's super conversational. So I'm interested to see what happens at Space Coast if that pays off for Mr. Twiggs. I want to know, as the years have evolved in Run Disney, and you know this, costumes have evolved. And then it was like 3 years ago where pacers started going really hard in costumes. And I'm looking at CC like as I'm saying this. How do you feel about running in costume?
I'm not a big fan of it. I participate in it, you know, at the minimal. But because I like to wear the Galloway singlet, so I want the run walk one to be showing, and I'm kind of more a professional, you know, if you're a pacer, you want to look like a pacer, but it's Run Disney. So, I mean, everybody's got to have fun with it. But we do have to incorporate in that costume somehow the run walk, and that you're a pacer on your costume.
Well, we as the Galloway family appreciate you making sure that people know how to find out more information about the run walk method as well.
I am excited about the wine and dine this year because we're going with the country's theme. So we have England for the 145 group. And so we're going with the Ted Lasso theme. England. So we got our soccer jerseys with our run walk. And rather than the banter on the front, we have pacer on the front. So I'm excited about it. It's going to be a good costume, something I'm going to enjoy.
That's fun. Very nice. We're tipping our hand a little on the costumes, people, because it's the excitement's building online. All right. I want to ask you about something that you have upcoming that I understand you have upcoming, but I do have to have you explain to everybody what the Seven Dwarfs Challenge was.
The Seven Dwarfs Challenge was something that I ran last year. So it was, we have the Dopey, which is 4 races in 4 days, different distances. And it was just something, I'm always trying to put a Disney or Star Wars theme to my run somehow, just come up with this crazy run. A couple years ago, we did a Star Wars trench run. This was back in 2019. And we actually raised $5,000 for breast cancer. So that's when my wife was going through her treatments. And that was the trench run was for the Death Star. I did some, you know, fan research and figured out that it was 312 miles distance around the Death Star. So I was like, you know what? I want to run around the Death Star.
That's enormous.
Yes.
So, it does not appear to be that enormous. I can't.
They thought it was a planet. Have you seen the film? It has gravity.
I thought it was a spaceship. It was a spaceship.
It's a battle station. So we did, over 4 days, we ran 312 miles and took some breaks in there to sleep. I took 6-hour breaks to sleep, but I was going to cover 3 hours or 312 miles in however many days. It took me 4 days to cover that. But we made a big thing out of it. Like I said, $5,000 for breast cancer and made a positive event out of it. So the Seven Dwarfs Marathon Challenge was something I came up with. So rather than the Dopey that was four races and 4 days, I did a marathon in 7 days, one to represent each dwarf.
How did you embody these dwarfs?
Well, the run was to average 3 hours for every marathon. That's what I wanted to do, sub 3 hours.
Okay.
So day one was a 2:58. Day two, I struggled because I treated these as races. I didn't stop my watch if I had to go in and go to the bathroom or if I had to change shoes. I kept my watch running just like any other race and had some issues that day and ran a 3:10. I was like, okay, well, you know, the goal's out the window. You know, I'm not going to be able to run sub 3 hours. But then I was came out the next day, ran a 3:01, I believe it was. And I was like, well, maybe I can average sub 3 hours for all seven, which meant I was going to have to get faster. And ended up the next couple of days running 2:56, 2:57, 2:58. And the final one was a 2:52 and was able to get that average under 3 hours for all seven marathons.
What was your course like for these?
People think I'm crazy. It was a 0.4 mile loop outside of my house.
So most
of my training, I usually do about 4,000 miles a year, 3,000 to 4,000 miles a year. Probably 2,500 miles of that is on a 0.4 mile loop outside of my house.
That is so small.
It is.
But I bet your force times tables are so good in your head.
So a lot of that went back to my wife being sick when I was training through her treatments. You know, I was just scared to leave the house. And, you know, so when I go out to run, I was like, if you ever have any issues, just turn on the front porch light and I'll know you need help. So that was the whole thinking. Sweet. And just over that year, just got numb to running 0.4 mile loop. And now it's just going out there every day and I'm just numb to it.
Oh my gosh. I think I'm crazy because we live on the West Orange Trail. So I'm a quarter mile from the trail and it's 6 miles to the station and 3 miles. So it's a 6 mile. So I do six, but wow, that's a really heartwarming reason. That's very, very sweet.
That is. And it also goes to prove, you know, what you've been talking about is that there are many, many different ways to train and people will always say, oh, I can't, you know, I couldn't do that. A lot of people go, oh, I can't do it on a treadmill. I can't do it on a small loop. There are many, many ways to train and many ways to be successful. Now, coming up on your calendar, if I'm right about this, you have something where you would like to be ultra successful and set a record. And that is the Across Florida 200, right? Virtual race. This is what it said about it. So, and I want you to kind of clear this up for me. A virtual race. November 15th spans the entire state of Florida from Crystal Springs, wrapping up in St. Augustine Beach. The current record, by the way, is 55 hours, 59 minutes, and 45 seconds. Explain this entire thing to me, because it sounds, let me be honest, insane.
That's been canceled.
No!
We are not running that race. So the whole plan was to run with my close friend, and he moved away to Texas. So he's not able to come back to do the race. So that's a tough race. It runs the whole peninsula of Florida and it runs through Ocala National Forest for like 60 miles. And it's usually in the evening when you cross through there. And there's no way that I'm running through that forest in the dark by myself.
Is this something you do on your own or it's like set up for a certain, it's like, this is the day it's happening. There's multiple people doing it.
So this was actually a real race that was going to happen back in 2020 and then COVID wiped it out. So they had to do a virtual. So it's treated just as a race. You have to submit all your GPS files to them so they can confirm it. And then you get your belt buckle for finishing the race. So there's probably been, I'd say 20 runners that have done that.
Yeah.
They just opened it up, and next year they're going to go back to a live race.
So were you going to plan for that?
It's a little bit steep on the pocketbook, so probably not. Oh. So I have a limit to how much I'll pay for races, and that's out of my
pushing it.
What I'm willing to pay.
I'm just always amazed at what people will come up with as a challenge, just to try to change the thinking. That's just amazing. Well, I'm sorry I had that big lead in, and
he Googled really well.
I Googled that, and I'm reading about it. I'm like, wait, you have to explain this to me, and so thank you.
But we've learned
something. Explaining it.
Yeah.
And I think you do need to run it next year so you can come back and tell us what it was like. So I'm just saying.
We have a lot of races on the schedule. I have about 8 races going through the schedule till next year. So we definitely filled that spot with something else.
Do you have a specific way you break them up? I mean, you know, you mentioned you ran like a marathon like week later, 2 weeks later. Do you normally try to space them out in any way? Or is it just really a case of this is where they fall on the calendar and this is what I'm interested in doing?
Yeah, that's pretty much how it works. You know, I try to space them at least a month in between. I won't run any closer than a month in between. But yeah, whatever, just, you know, looks interesting. There's a race that I'm going to be doing in July in Jupiter, Florida. It's called Immolition. So it's a 24-hour race, and it's 3.2-mile loop around. So every hour, it's kind of like a last man standing backyard event where every hour you run 3.2 miles. Mm-hmm. And then if you finish that within 30 minutes, you have 30 minutes to rest before the next loop starts. And then they just take your accumulated time over those 12 hours, and the person with the fastest accumulated time wins that race.
I think those are a really cool concept. It's very different from like a straight road race. Jesse Itzler, we met Running Man, was talking about.
Of those backyard events, they go on for days and days and days, 3-4 days. And there's no way I'm spending 3-4 days out there for a last man standing. So this is the closest that I can come to it right now until I'm willing to make that jump into the backyard events.
Well, that seems even more crazy, days and days and days. Before we move on to our final questions, talk to me about your Disney background. Were you a Disney kid? You just wanted a marathon and happened to be at Disney, and you've grown to love Disney. Tell us about that.
Yeah, we grew up. I grew up as a Disney and Star Wars fan, you know, all my life. So once we moved to Atlanta, Disney was calling us to Florida. So, and that's the reason why we came down to Florida. You know, we got some jobs, transferred down here, and, you know, became pass holders in 2008 when we moved down. And have been pass holders ever since.
Very cool. All right. Now we're going to move on to our final questions. We ask these of all of our guests, Mark. So you're perfect for this first one, certainly. When you get to a hard place in a run or a workout, we talk about those ultra marathons, even a, you know, half marathon workout, how do you motivate yourself to keep going?
A lot of this goes back to my wife being sick, you know. I'll think about her sometimes out there, you know, because anything that I am experiencing out there on the race course is probably not half of what she had to go through, through her breast cancer treatments, her surgeries and everything. So, that's a little bit of the reasoning behind it. And I just like to push myself to see how far I can go. If I don't run the time that I want, it's not the end of the world. You know, there's always another day. There's always another race. So there's always going to be better days ahead if it's not a successful day for me.
I think that's something really important for people to remember, especially newer distance runners. They get so caught up in the time. And, you know, there's a point in the race where you realize I'm not going to get that goal time. And some people can't come back from that and finish strong. They spend the whole time kind of beating themselves up. I wish more people would just honor that day and what their body had to give that day, because, you know, like you said with your wife, like some people don't have those great days that they can get out there and run. We've seen a lot of inspiring things at finish lines. I'm sure you have too. You talked about the gentleman who knocked off that 25-minute PR. What's the most inspiring moment you've seen or heard about at a race?
The most inspiring moment. I would probably say I was a cross-country coach a couple years ago. And we were at a event, and we had one of the runners out there in the middle of the race. He collapsed at about the 2-mile mark. And I witnessed two other students from different schools pick him up, and they carried him to the finish line. They were under his arms, and they all walked to the finish line, all three of them together. And, I mean, it was really neat to see three different schools, three different kids finishing together like that. That was something I'll probably never forget.
That's a good one. Very, very, the whole running community is very inspiring. I love that it even trickles down that far to competitive athletes in high school and stuff. All right. So you've got what, 8 races coming up on your calendar. It's always interesting stuff that you're doing. You'll be pacing races. If people want to keep up with you, Mark, where can they find you on the internet machine and all that sort of stuff?
I guess my only two social medias, I'm on Instagram at Mark Burgett. That's MARC I'm spelled with a C. And then the same thing on Facebook is Mark Burgett. So B-U-R-G-E-T, just as it sounds. So I'll be the Facebook with, I think it's Emma the pig from Animal Kingdom. I have a pig in my, so.
Will you be at Wine and Dine Expo?
I will be. I'll be at Wine and Dine Expo. I'm planning on being there all day long on Saturdays. So if anybody wants to come out to, you know, talk to us about pacing or running with a pace group or even run walk, you know, we love talking, run walk, and willing to spend as much time as they want with us.
Awesome. Well, thank you for spending this time with us. Congrats again on your TikTok Ultra and all your other amazing accolades. And John and I look forward to seeing you at the start, but probably not the finish in a couple of weeks. Sorry, we're not that fast.
Thanks so much. I appreciate it.
Bye.
Thanks, Mark.
See ya.
Athletes, listen up. It's mail call time. Announcer Free, present.
All right. Thank you, Sarge. Now, this is an emotional and beautiful email from Megan about her son, Isaac, that you will get to meet at the Wine and Dine 5K. All right. Megan says, I've been running Run Disney events since 2016 and have completed everything from a 5K to Dopey to virtual races ever since then. My son, Isaac, has cheered me on, even been at the finish line for a few of those races. Over the years, he's asked to participate in a race with me. When it came time to sign up for the Wine and Dine 2024, I decided since he'd be turning 10 on October 17th, a couple of weeks before the 5K, that would be a good starting race for him. I was able to secure a challenge spot for myself and a 5K spot for both of us. I even signed us both up for the virtual snack run so we could use that to train for the Wine and Dine.
So Megan goes on to say that while attending a Marlins Red Sox game in Miami on the 4th of July, which is about 2.5 hours from their home, Isaac suddenly began feeling sick out of nowhere. He was having a hard time communicating, she says, and the paramedics at the field decided that he needed to go by ambulance to the Miami Children's Hospital because they were afraid he was having a seizure or a stroke. Once he was admitted, they did a CAT scan and, she says, delivered the most shocking and terrifying news of our lives, that their healthy, active 9-year-old had a mass on his brain. They were extremely fortunate that this is the hospital where it was discovered. As if it had been at home, they would have more likely sent him all the way here, 2.5 hours away, anyway.
All right. He would go on to spend 10 days in the hospital and undergo an 8-hour brain surgery to determine what the mass was. He was diagnosed with diffuse grade 2 astrocytoma glioma. Due to the tumor being diffuse, removal, not an option, as it's too intertwined with the brain. Our plan was to originally start chemo and avoid radiation, but after further testing, Isaac had two certain mutations, TERT promoter and EGFR, which changed the diagnosis to a grade 4. This meant radiation was needed to start immediately, and we had to look for a clinical trial study he'd be eligible to fight the type of cancer. He'd be eligible for to fight this type of cancer. In a fortunate twist, it was only available in two hospitals in Florida, and one of them was less than 5 minutes from our home. We're able to return to Fort Myers, where Isaac would begin daily radiation treatments in an attempt to shrink the tumor. Throughout this experience, he's amazed us with his tenacity and even been able to return to school full time. After completing 33 radiation treatments, he was cleared to participate in sports again. He's back on the baseball team and beyond excited to be allowed to compete in the Wine and Dine 5K, where we will be dressed as Kermit and Miss Piggy. Look for us on the course and give an extra cheer if you see Isaac. Come on!
I mean, when I'm reading that, and I, you know, I've read it before when I'm processing, like, he was 9 at that baseball game. Claire is 9. Just to think about how everything can change. And we're taping this on October 21st, I believe. Tomorrow, the 22nd, they'll have some testing to find out how successful everything has been. So we hope that that goes well. But he will be dressed as Kermit. So if you guys see Isaac out there, you know what we say. We never know what people are going through when they're out there. But this is a big deal for them. So we just want to send all of our 3-2-1 go good energy to them. And the Run Disney community is truly amazing. You know, there are, you can say just a 5K, but for them, the beacon of hope that getting to the start line is, can you imagine, John? Just like, that's the big deal. So it's never just a 5K. It's never just anything. These races are big, huge deals for a lot of people. And we hope that they have good news when they're lining up there at that start line.
Absolutely. We so look forward to seeing Isaac. So
yes. And if you see Riley out there, go cook up with Riley so we can hear from you, so we can say hi. Thank you guys for listening. If you have a story you want to share, it's 321gopodcast@gmail.com. Thank you to Mark. Thank you to Weston, our producer. And
all right. Thanks for tuning in, everyone. Before we wrap up, we want to give a special shout out to our friend Sarah Akers with Runs on Magic. Now, Sarah is a passionate Run Disney enthusiast. She loves nothing more than helping you plan those magical Run Disney weekends. But with her expertise, the possibilities are endless. Whether you're dreaming of a honeymoon escape, an all-inclusive girls trip, a boys trip to Las Vegas, a family cruise, international adventure, whatever it is, Sarah is here to make it happen. Best part? Her travel planning services are completely complimentary. Sarah creates personalized itineraries and specializes in Run Disney, Universal, and cruise vacations. And for our listeners, she's offering a special promo. Use the code 321GO when requesting your vacation quote, and you could receive up to a $200 Disney gift card or booking credit, depending on your destination. You can connect with Sarah on Instagram at RunsOnMagic for the latest offers and more, or reach out to her directly at runsonmagictravel@gmail.com. Thank you so much, Sarah, and thank you all for listening.
We'll see you real soon.
Bye-bye.